I'm Dr. Leif Tapanola from the Idaho Museum of Natural History, and I'm here with Peter Pruitt from Zoo Idaho, and this is The Nature of Idaho. Coming to you from the 1B, Bannock County that is, we're talking all about Idaho, its wild places and wild faces, the natural setting that makes Idaho an incredible place to live and be proud of. Well, today our guests are Heather Teal Nelson and Kevin Lloyd from the Bureau of Land Management. We're talking about an icon of the American West, wild horses. Peter, this is going to be a lot of fun to talk about wild horses today.
It totally is. When you think of the West, your first image is this beautiful stallion rearing up in the sunset in the background with mountains.
I know. Can you imagine there was a time when those animals were not here?
They were not here.
Right.
Nope.
Well, we'll get into that. We'll dig in. But you know, first, Peter, I think you've got a piece of paper there with some nature news.
We've got some nature news here,
right,
Leif. There are more than 110,000 species of wasps in the world, and it's estimated that there's probably still another 100,000 species waiting to be discovered. Now, we want to contrast with mammals, which is about 5,400 species.
So give me that number again. How many wasps?
110,000 wasps, with another 100,000 needing to be discovered.
That's a lot of species. Okay.
That's a lot of species, and we all love wasps.
Oh, intensely.
They belong in an order called Hymenoptera.
That's right.
Which is divided into two groups, the Parasitica and the Aculeata. Approximately 80,000 species are in the Parasitica group, which they kind of lay eggs in their prey and plants using an ovipositor. It sounds kind of gross, but those are the ones that can't sting you. The ovipositor in the Aculeata has been converted into the stinger. These guys are the predators.
I see. Okay.
They're the bad ones, yes. What we're finding out is wasps have a huge environmental impact. Not only are they great pollinators, which they do, the fig tree can only be pollinated by the fig wasp.
Right.
So can you imagine if the fig wasp didn't exist? No more figs. And we're talking about over 1,200 mammals and birds that use fig trees. So that's a huge benefit with wasps. And the other big one is that the predators kill arthropods, bugs
yes.
that we don't like.
So by injecting them with
their
eggs.
Venom and their eggs,
and their
too.
Eggs.
Yeah.
Oof.
Not such a cool thing to be an arthropod when a wasp is out to get you.
Well, they have their part, their role to play.
Oh, they
right?
totally do. Yeah.
They're fun to watch flying. I just don't like them flying too close.
Oh,
to
no.
Me.
And honestly, the only time where they really get active and aggressive is towards the end of the summer. But if you have to do anything with a wasp nest, wait until dusk or early morning when they're still asleep.
I bet you've encountered that at the zoo a few times.
Way too many times.
There you go. Well, today we're talking about wild horses. Trivia time for today is going to deal with that. How many, Peter, let's you think about this one. We're going to have an answer by the end of the show. But how many wild horses and burros have been adopted since 1971?
I'm guessing it's more than 10.
More than 10 for sure is the answer. That's a clue.
Yes.
But we'll get a whole lot more into that right after this break.
This is KISU-FM Pocatello, Idaho Falls, Rexburg. Also available on your Amazon or Google smart speaker with the command Play KISU.
Hey, we're back from the break. I want to welcome Heather Teal Nelson and Kevin Lloyd. They're both from the Bureau of Land Management. So thank you for joining us today on The Nature of Idaho.
You bet.
Glad to be here. We're excited.
Heather and Kevin, can you each speak to what your roles are working for the BLM?
Oh, sure. So I'm a public affairs specialist on the Twin Falls District, but I also have the honor of doing public affairs work for Idaho's Wild Horse and Burro team. So whenever we have a wild horse gather or an adoption event, a team of specialists come together and perform that work.
How about you, Kevin?
So I'm the wild horse specialist out of the Challis Field office. I get to manage the herd management area in Challis. I have about 185 horses there now, and I do a lot of the day-to-day hands-on management of those horses. I also get to help with adoptions throughout eastern Idaho, whether it's in Pocatello or Idaho Falls, help facilitate those adoptions of the wild horses.
Before we get in too deep, I just want to make sure everyone's clear on what we're talking about. So we have wild horses. I think we can understand that concept. Tell us about a burro, in case anyone's not sure.
Right. So burros are wild donkeys. We actually don't have any donkeys on any of Idaho's public rangelands. They can certainly be found, however, in California, Utah, Nevada, and Arizona. And they tend to be very popular with our adopters, for sure.
So how did you get into horse management?
You know, I'd started with a degree in range ecology. That's what I graduated with. And I went to work in Rock Springs, Wyoming. And I had some horse background and a lot of wildlife background. And they thought it would be a good fit for the wild horse program. And I just was kind of thrown into it without really knowing a whole lot about the program before I started.
Best way to learn, I suppose.
Yeah. And you know, and that was about 20 years ago, and it's been a great career, and really have loved all of my experiences with the wild horses and being able to manage them.
Where are the ranges that we manage in Idaho, and how many horses are in Idaho?
So actually here in Idaho, we have 6 wild horse herd management areas. 3 of them are along the Owyhee Front just outside of Boise. We have 3 herd management areas there. We have 1 herd management area, or HMA, north of Emmett, 1 south of Glens Ferry, and then, of course, our Challis herd management area. And in comparison to other states, Idaho's wild horse herds, it's a fairly small program. We have fewer than 700 wild horses on our ranges right now. The good news for Idaho is that we are within what we call our appropriate management level. Let's see, I think it's 4 of our herd management areas we are within the appropriate management level. So our numbers on Idaho's rangelands right now are solid.
This begs the question, where do these wild horses come from?
Mm-hmm, sure. That's a good question. Kevin, do you want to take it?
So, you know, a lot of them were turned loose around the late 1800s, early 1900s. A lot of the horses were involved in the Cavalry Remount Program, where the government provided studs that they would turn loose and with the wild horses that were already running out there. And then they would collect those every few years because they needed horses for the Cavalry Program. And this program lasted quite a while into the 19th century. And so those horses, offspring of those horses, are still out there. A lot of local management was used by the people that used the public lands at that time. If they needed some horses for their ranch, they would go catch a few horses. If they didn't need them through winter or they weren't able to maintain them, they would turn them loose. It was a thought out management program where they would go get horses that they needed. Like if they needed a bigger horse, they'd turn draft horses out so that they could then gather those later. And one of the things that the Bureau of Land Management has done with all of the herd management areas is we've done DNA testing. And so we have a very good idea. Not only do we have the oral history of people that we know that turned horses out, but we have this DNA evidence. We send it to Texas A&M to be analyzed, and we know, you know, what horses, modern horse breeds, they tie closely to for every one of our herd management areas. And really, like when you look at the herd like Challis, we know that it's a mixture of draft and riding breeds, which, you know, correlates to our oral history. You know, a lot of people, when they think of the wild horses, they think of horses that were turned loose by the Spanish, and they have that Iberian Peninsula bloodlines. And those are really rare throughout the BLM program. It's really less than 10 herd management areas have that Iberian Peninsula Spanish blood, and they're pretty isolated. The majority are this mixture of riding draft horses that either have the Cavalry Remount or stagecoach horses or mining horses that were turned loose. The mines used Shetland ponies because they were smaller and could fit down the mine shafts. And so, you know, there's a lot of that Shetland pony influence in the herds now, and you can tie back to that. Some of it, there's also environmental factors that play a part of that because, like in some of our real deserty, dry areas, they're not going to support a big draft horse. There's just not the food or water, the environmental conditions to allow those big horses to persist. where, you know, some of our colder areas, better forage areas, then we can have those bigger horses. And that's one of the reasons why the horses of the big draft horses have persisted in the Chalice area, is because, you know, we have the environmental conditions to allow for that.
It's really cool when you can take the oral history and back it with some science.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, and it's really interesting to tie in the cultural aspect of our wild horses as well. So that's really cool. This leads to the very next question, obvious question. Why do we need to manage these wild horses now?
You know, wild horse herds really don't have any natural predators. And so a herd can double in size every 4 years. So we know that when wild horses received federal protection in 1971, there were about 25,000 wild horses roaming the range west-wide. Today, we have probably more than 90,000 wild horses and burros on our public rangelands. This is significantly over, I think probably more than three times over what we know the range can sustain in balance with the other uses on the range, like wildlife habitat, livestock grazing. So that's what leads the Bureau to needing to manage this overpopulation on the range. Westwide, we've established that we can manage about 27,000 wild horses on our rangelands, and so that's what's led the Bureau to needing to conduct wild horse gathers. And then, what do we do with them once we remove them from the range? That begins that next question. And we've then started a program to place them into private care. And so that's generally speaking. And unfortunately, over the years, our adoption demand really hasn't kept pace with our need to remove the horses from the range. So we're caring for about 50,000 animals off the range to the tune of $50 million annually.
So the load of animals that you would need to be adopted is how many typically in a year?
Well, wouldn't you say, Kevin, it's about, I think probably 10, 15 years ago, we were removing 10 to 12,000 animals a year. And that's probably when we were the closest to our appropriate management level. And even then, we were at that 36,000 to 45,000 animals on the range. So, and then for a period of time, holding became an issue. So we were essentially removing from the range what we could then place into private care. And those numbers had plummeted in around 2007, 2008, to where we were only placing about 2,500 to 3,000 animals a year.
And so to clarify, this is across all BLM land,
correct.
Not necessarily just within Idaho.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. To give you an example, of the more than 90,000 animals that are on the range, half of those animals are in Nevada. The state of Nevada has our largest wild horse population.
And so you did mention the year 2007. And I can remember when we had the 2008 Great Recession, and I would see on TV people and families in the West who couldn't afford to take care of their herd, their horses anymore. And they were just letting them loose, kind of like the cavalry horses and the people 100 years ago in Idaho. You know, did you see an influx then of horses within the wild population at that time?
And it wasn't just in 2007, 2008. Occasionally I'll find horses that I really think are turned loose. You know, they're friendlier. You can approach them a lot easier than, you know, the majority of the wild horses out there. What's tricky is when, you know, even though you can approach them and get close, as being able to find a brand or anything that would tie them back to an individual is really difficult. I know that happens on occasion, but we're kind of limited on things that we can do about it. And it's not a lot of horses. It's maybe a couple a year or a couple maybe every few years. But yeah, I think that happens on occasion.
And I wish people would realize it's like, you know, working in the zoos, there's a lot of reptile and bird rescue facilities. There are also horse and donkey rescue facilities too. So if you ever do feel the need that you can't care for your horse appropriately anymore, just spend a little bit of time and Google horse rescue. There's going to be a place nearby that you can send that horse to, which is so much better, not only for the horse, but for our habitat, wildlife, and the wild herds.
Right, totally.
So I'm thinking about your daily life, managing the chalice herd, for example. How cohesive is that herd? I assume they move around to forage in different regions. So are you trailing them and keeping an eye on exactly their movements on a day-to-day, weekly kind of basis?
You know, I have a pretty good idea of where the horses are throughout the year. They do move. It's more environmental conditions. The snow level makes a big difference. You know, that's what really determined our appropriate management level in Chalice, is the amount of snow and what forage was available during those winter years. That'll limit them in the wintertime, but in the summer they have full access to the whole range, and water is pretty well distributed across it. And so, you know, they're spread out a lot more in the summer than winter. There's one particular area that is great. I send all the photographers that come to Chalice to an area called Antelope Flat off of Spar Canyon. And early spring, late winter, they'll just congregate in that area, and it's easy to see quite a number of horses. In the next coming weeks, there'll be 40 or so horses out there. A year ago, before we did our gather, which we did a gather in November, there would have been almost 100 horses out there. So it's a great place to be able to view the horses. You have the Lost River Range with snow on the background right behind them. You know, Mount Bora, the highest peak in Idaho, is right there. I really wish that I could spend every day out there with them, but I'm out there enough that I have a pretty good idea. One of the things that we do for the management is we've introduced fertility control, and that limits the population growth so that we have to remove fewer horses over time, so that we don't have to come in and gather as often. So one of the ways that we treat those horses with fertility control is through the remote darting program, and we use volunteers. We partnered with a group called Wild Love Preserve back in 2012. And so BLM and their volunteers spend time out on the range. We have to approach within about less than 50 yards, but I like to be more like 30 yards. And we can treat the mares with this fertility control, and that'll keep them from having offspring for a year. And it uses their immune system to be able to do that. I figure that it takes about 4 hours per horse. And so I figure I can dart 2 horses a day, roughly. So it is very time consuming. And that's an average, because some days I'll get like 3 or 4 and some days I won't get any.
But it's like fishing.
Very, very much so.
So when you look at management plans, how often are you making decisions? Are you making annual decisions on the population management? Or is it 2 years, 3 years? How do you make that decision?
The appropriate management level was determined in the early 80s, and we continue to go by that. We make local adjustments on like a 5 to 10 year time period now. Our last one was a year ago, so we expect the management from that plan to last at least 10 years, and that allows us to plan for the long-term management of the horses, so we know we can treat with fertility control, we can do a helicopter gather when we need to, we can do some bait trapping, and so we can manage that within the limits that is environmentally sound out there.
I have to ask this. You work with this herd for 20 years. Horses do live fairly long. Do you have favorites that you see every year? And have you named those favorites?
I do have favorites. I'd stay away from naming them. I try to keep it as scientific as possible. And that was one of the first things from one of the first wildlife classes I had, is to not name them. But I do have favorites, and they are pretty visible. And they're ones that I do probably treat more on a regular basis. A lot of it's accessibility, you know, where those horses are during the time frame when I can get to them to dart them. So
I was going to just follow up. Are there ways that the wild population behaves differently than if you had a small accumulation of horses on a ranch? Are their behaviors comparable, or are they very specialized in their own way?
It's pretty comparable. There are things, because they are a breeding population, a lot of your ranch or farm groups are not a breeding population. You know, you may have mares and geldings together, but you're not going to have studs out there too. You don't have young horses in the mix. And so in that way, they're different. But, you know, the interactions between horses is pretty similar from, like, things that I'll see with my horses at home. And, you know, when they're running around, or the pecking order, you know, which one's on top, you'll see that the same out in the wild.
Oh, I was just going to go back to those favorites. When we gathered the Chalice herd in 2009, there was a pinto foal. He caught my eye, and I took a picture of him. And would you know it? We gathered him this November, and I got a photo of him. Now here he is, a 10-year-old stud, and he's beautiful. And it was so fun for me to go digging back through my photos to see him when he was a weanling and compare those side by side. It really is. There's something very special about our wild horse herds.
I think you should probably think about adopting him soon.
Well, I said that to Kevin, but he's so darn special. He needed to go back out to the range.
Gotcha. So let's talk a little bit about this adoption program, but we don't want to give the trivia answer.
Right.
Yet.
I will try to avoid that. Yes. The Bureau has really worked to increase our adoptions, our private care. You know, we've got a lot of animals that we care for off the range. And it's very expensive, so we are trying to increase our private care placement. And one of the things that BLM implemented just last year, 2018, here we are, 2020 now, was the Adoption Incentive Program. So if you as an adopter meet the requirements, so you can show that you've got an appropriate facility, you've never been convicted of an animal cruelty charge, you're at least 18 years of age, BLM will pay you $1,000 to adopt a wild horse. Our adoptions last year, we had a 54% increase in adoptions. We had offered more animals, we had more adoption events, and a lot of people were taking advantage of this adoption incentive program. So it was great. Another partnership where I think we've found a tremendous amount of success has been with our Mustang Heritage Foundation and the training program. You know, these horses draw a lot of interest. People are so fascinated by them and their history. They're a wonderful icon, as you said, of the American West. But maybe they may not have the experience necessary to have a wild horse. So if we can actually provide some training where they can get their hands on them, maybe they can saddle them, pick up their feet so they can provide the appropriate veterinary care for these animals, our adopters tend to be a lot more successful. So this Mustang Heritage Foundation came up with originally the Extreme Mustang Makeover, which was very successful. Kind of a fun idea, 100 horses, 100 trainers, 100 days, let's see what happens. And then they were able to adopt those animals out afterwards, and that has just continued to grow and continued to help us place more animals. So that training component is really helpful.
That's fantastic, and that's a great way that our listeners could get involved in helping, I don't know, dealing with this population and helping maintain, I guess, the strength of these animals that live in our land. Could you tell us a little bit about their environmental impact and why this is so important that we're managing population, not only for the animals themselves, but for the maintenance, I guess, of the land use for all?
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Yeah, you bet. It's a balancing act, and we're trying to maintain that balance. You know, the number of animals we have out there with the resource itself, the watersheds, the native plants. So we have to factor in the wild horses that are out there, the wildlife that are out there. Like in Chalice, we have salmon and steelhead streams that are fed from areas within the herd management area. So we got to keep that balance out there. I mean, we want healthy horses out there. You know, I don't want to have, you know, skinny horses that have been impacted by limited forage. I don't want to send photographers out there, and have really poor looking horses. If they are struggling to survive, then that means that they're having impacts on the watershed, that they're overgrazing the land, that there are too many animals, there's too much of a use. they can be destructive on sensitive spring sources and, you know, the plants. And so we really try to keep that balance. And, you know, we look at those numbers pretty regularly. A lot of times we'll fly and count the horses. Really, we try to strike that balance out there.
You know, there are those who would argue that the horses, you know, are competing with cattle for this range. But in reality, the horses are say, out there every day, all day. So 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and cattle are managed. And where they're rotated, they have seasons of use, they're rotated through different pastures and and in fact, livestock grazing has actually decreased on our public lands 31% since the 70s.
I want to bring us back to, again, how the listeners can get involved. And adoption is a big tool that you have at your disposal to again, help this population, help the environment, and keep this icon healthy and robust for future generations. I want to come back to our trivia question because I'm fascinated by this. How many wild horses and burros have been adopted since 1971? Can you help us with that question?
I think I can. That number would be over 245,000 animals have been placed into private care.
Wow, that's a giant number.
It's a lot of horse and donkeys.
Yes, it is.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. All right, we want to thank Heather Teal Nelson and Kevin Lloyd for joining us today. To learn more about the BLM's wild horse management, please visit blm.gov/WHB.
Thank you guys so much for being here.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
It was fun to be here.
The Nature of Idaho is produced at KISU-FM Studios at Idaho State University in Pocatello. Technical assistance and production by Jamin Anderson and Caitlin Hart. Music is by Idaho's very own Sons of Bannock. Audio of this and all past episodes of The Nature of Idaho can be found at KISU.org. Find The Nature of Idaho weekly podcast on iTunes or Google Play Music. For more information, click on the Idaho logo at KISU.org. Or send email to noidkisu@isu.edu.